11 Labs text to speech GPT.
Correct.
He said, generate a story for me, then convert it to an audiobook, two paragraphs. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
And then see, the first thing it did was it came back to me and said, well, what's the voice that you want to do it in? And I picked Jarvis. Mm. And so then it did the story for me, and then it generated the audio. And if I go over here now, the story that was generated, I can play it. And let's listen.
Metropolis, beneath the shadow of towering skyscrapers, lay a quaint little bookstore that seemed almost forgotten by time.
So that's Jarvis from Iron Man.
Avengers, right? Iron Man. Yeah, I'm not sure where he made his debut. Wow, that's wild.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by Squarespace. Turn your idea into a new website. Go to squarespace.com/twist for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use offer code TWIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Gusto is easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses. Get 3 months free when you run your first payroll at gusto.com/twist. And LinkedIn Jobs. A business is only as strong as its people, and every hire matters. Post your first job for free at linkedin.com/twist.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to This Week in Startups. And I've got my good friend, my bestie, Sandeep Madra here. He goes by Sunny. His real name is Sandeep. He's the co-founder of Definitive Intelligence. You can go take a look at their website, definitive.io. They do all kinds of data analysis of private and public data with their AI-enhanced system, their platform. And we get together here every week, usually on Mondays, but we've both been traveling, to go over the latest updates in AI. The latest updates in AI. And we do that through demos. We've done over 100 demos. You can go see all of those demos at thisweekinstartups.com/AI. Boom. That's it. /AI. How you doing, Sandeep?
I'm doing really good. I'm excited. You know, there is so much stuff happening, and we should just get right into it.
Okay. Give me the first one.
Okay. The first one. So this one is super cool. It's called Hume. And I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm going to just pull it up here.
H-U-M-E. Hume. I would think it's Hume.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's Hume.ai. Got it.
Hume.ai. And what they do is they basically predict call quality, attention, and mood using an AI model. And so this is important, I think, in a lot of customer support use cases or SDR use cases where you're trying to do, or even if you're doing a podcast and you want to basically get an understanding of, you know, how you think people are interpreting it. So I took this, it takes a few minutes to run, so I had to kind of do this beforehand, but I took kind of a short clip of yours.
Basically,
I took one of their models and I had it classify it. Uh-huh. And basically, you know, it kind of did the classification around, you know, whether you're self-confident or self-doubting just by looking at your video. And as you can see here, J-Cal, you will not be surprised, you came at 99.39% self-confident.
Wow. You know what they say, fake until you make it. I mean, if you believe it, you believe in yourself.
I mean, so J-Cal, this is it, right? Like, we've got to send this in our poker group, but like...
Oh, God, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So literally, you took a 30-second clip of me from the podcast.
Yes.
And Hume AI determined I am 99.39% confident and 0.001%. In other words, I'm delusional to a level that this computer system, this AI, has finally unmasked exactly how delusional I am. I, you know, I have so many thoughts on this, but the AI can't be wrong, can it? That's my first thought. Yeah, I think we need a larger sample size.
And so basically, it has a bunch of great models. Obviously, I tried this one, self-confident or self-doubting, but they have Parkinson's versus non-Parkinson's for health-related, alert versus drowsy, attentive versus distracted. So you can imagine for the people that are still working from home, and if you layer this into like a Zoom or maybe even, you know, Vinny's thing, which they renamed to Roomy now, imagine how powerful this could be. Like, hey, are your people even paying attention when they're on Zoom?
Yep. Yeah. And so there are a series of apps that do this for salespeople. They've been around for a while. What I like about this is you're uploading the video. You're not doing it in real time, I take it.
Yes. Yeah.
You're doing this as coaching for individuals. So I kind of like this as a, in a way, it's kind of like having a speaking coach. You know, people will hire those to take out the ums and the ahs, or, hey, make eye contact when you do this, look directly into your camera. So, you know, one of the things I have a problem with is, especially when I'm moderating, right, which you do kind of the moderating job here, you're reading. So I wonder if when you're reading, like, and you're queuing things up, if that is distracted or if that screws with your confidence, right? Whereas when I'm commenting or, like, you know, take the All In podcast, I'm moderating, I have to, like, take a series of facts, or I might be fact checking somebody or pulling up a chart. So I wonder, like, what impact that has on the sentiment analysis or these emotional analysis, confident versus not confident, distracted versus non-distracted. But all of that's really good stuff. And you know, I think this is going to be built into Zoom eventually. So Zoom will probably give you some tips. Hey, you know what? You look a little sleepy. So this could be creepy and dystopian, but here we are. What do you think? Is it accurate? Let me start with that. Do you think this is accurate?
Yeah, well, look, I only did like a couple of test things. But, you know, what I liked about it is exactly what you said. It allows you to kind of in an offline capacity go and address that. And I think especially with the growth in the creator economy, with so many more people trying to do, you know, podcasts or make videos, this is a great way to get an analysis. Like, I watched this really good video by Colin and Samir. They were explaining, like, sort of the challenges they have with Twitter video versus the other platforms and the amount of analysis that they do on a video, right? In terms of just the regular analytics of where are people falling off and where are they coming in and all that. So this is just another layer now because you can add that to your repertoire, right? And so
if your landing page looks terrible, I'm out. I'm going to just bounce. It's 2024. There are no more excuses for an ugly website. Stop settling for okay and start using Squarespace and be awesome. Squarespace is an out-of-the-box solution that lets you build a beautiful website and engage your audience. And of course, it can sell anything you like. They've got an amazing drag-and-drop web designer, gorgeous templates that are always optimized for mobile, where the majority of your users in all likelihood will be visiting your website. And you're going to get all the great advanced analytics like marketing, sales, etc., built into Squarespace. You don't have to go buy third-party tools. You can also create an online store or start your own blog at a click of a button, create a subscription business for members-only content, and so much more. It's the simplest, the most effective, and the best-looking way for you to start a business online, and you can do it all. Squarespace.com/twist for a free trial. That's squarespace.com/twist for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, you're going to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain at squarespace.com/twist.
It's interesting how obsessive people get about these. You know, it's why I like podcasting to a certain extent when you're not on video, because you can just focus on the words and just absorb that in the conversation. But increasingly, people want to watch videos, and then people are obsessed with clips. So we do clips of this show, this being at startups.com/AI.
Just double click.
Oh, the clips will always beat the actual original program, but the original program, you get people having a deeper understanding. So I kind of call it like drive-by sampling hors d'oeuvres versus sitting down and, you know, doing the full tasting menu, as it were, right? So they're different experiences. Sometimes you just want to grab and go. You know, I'm just going to grab a quick hit. I want to see one demo of This Week in Startups AI demos on Mondays. You know, I want to see Freeberg riff on science. I want to see Chamath do markets. I want to see Sachs do Ukraine, whatever he's into at this moment in time. And, you know, that might fit, scratch your itch, so to speak. Yeah. And so I think increasingly, you know, there are a group of people who only know certain podcasts from the clips, and they don't actually have the wherewithal, the attention, the desire, some combination of those things to consume a whole podcast. I think the people who consume whole podcasts are your really serious audience. And then you have the secondary audience, which it doesn't make it invalid, but they just, you know, they're just kind of snackers, you know, they're grazing on the content, they're grazing, and that's okay too. Sometimes you convert one to the other, right? Sometimes people just listen to the whole pod, but they think the clip is funny. But more often than not, I think people go from like watching a clip on TikTok or increasingly YouTube Shorts, and then they find out, oh, there's a whole podcast. Maybe I should subscribe to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I think there's a whole new genre of people who are like, why do a podcast? I'll just do clips all day. Just do three or four clips, and then I hope that some hit. I find that you don't get the depth of podcasting with that, right? And so... Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a missed opportunity, but it is valid, you know, to get a short. People like shorts.
Yeah, Yeah. So, you know, I think the team's done a great job. They made it super easy. It's very usable. They have like a playground like you'd expect. Yeah. And so, you know, I think
is this all built? Would you know what language model they're using or what visual model they're using for this? Maybe you tell us a little bit about the technology behind this and how it works.
They haven't shared a lot. So my understanding by going through the website is that they've taken models and tuned them themselves, right? So they've taken models and given it, or maybe even created the models that wasn't super clear, where they've said, here's a bunch of folks that are look to be confident here. They look to be, you know, not confident. So this is the, I want to call it fallout, but this is the next derivative of all this work that's happening in standard generative AI. People are looking at those techniques and applying it to even create their own models.
If you were going to build this from scratch, how would you do it?
It all comes down to the training set, right? So I would use the same training philosophy that's used to build large language models. And I would basically have a bunch of video that is, you know, labeled, you know, confident, non-confident, and then basically give it to the model to look at and learn, right? That's the beauty of
and
it.
Then so
it
comes down to the training set. You'd have to like take that original data and say, you know, this person's like an actor.
Yeah.
Like, is the reason I'm coming across as super confident in that clip because I was actually confident or because I've done 2000 podcast episodes? I wonder if it's a performance thing or it's actual reality. That's why I was wondering about the accuracy of this. So I would need to see more of this. I would need to put into this, you know, like, let's just say, you know, the top talk, Bill Gurley's talk at All In Summit. You know, he was super confident. He was funny. Yeah. He was pretty confident in his position because he had experienced it, right? And then, you know, see what it says, because he also has a bit of a Southern accent from Texas. He's got a slower pace. He's very humble. So, you know, said another way, you know, the training data could say maybe he's not confident. This is what I'm wondering, because he's humble, right? Or he's super confident because they're an actor, right? And so, I really need to get a lot more information on this to see if it's really, really working. What I would like to do here is I would like to run a test. This is how I would train it. Okay. I would have you give me a series of questions and answers. Jason, what's 2 + 2? And I'd say 4. And say, well, how confident are you? That's absolutely 2 + 2 = 4. And then you'd say, okay, what's the square root of this, you know, 20 digit number? I'd be like, and you'd be like, that's not confident, you know, unsure. Yeah. And then, or I would say, give this as the answer. And you would give me a piece of paper or on my screen, it would say, this is the wrong answer. I made it up, and you say it, but say it confidently. And I'd say it's super confident is the wrong answer. And we try to trick it. Right.
Yeah.
And so you could have it lie, right? Hey, what's your name? And you say, my name's Vinny. And I say, no, your name's Sandeep. And you say, no, my name's Vinny. Yeah. And we go back and forth. And then we tell the language is lying. I wonder if it could tell lying. I mean, this is what's going to happen. To dovetail this story with Apple goggles.
Yeah.
I'm not calling it vision. I'm calling it goggles because they look like ski goggles.
Ski goggles.
I mean, you put Apple goggles on and now I'm talking to you or I'm out in the real world and we're wearing this at a poker game. Would I actually know you're lying or bluffing? Interesting.
Ooh, what about that use case? You're like, wearing you don't need the Apple ones. You can just wear the Meta ones that just look like regular sunglasses. Because all this needs is a video capture.
Yeah, and then it just buzzes your ankle 2 times on your right ankle means not confident, lying. And then the left side means confident, you know, probably has it. I mean, this is going to be really, really interesting. And I wonder if people, if you uploaded clips of a player. So like, let's say we play with Jason Kuhn or, you know, Phil Hellmuth. And if you uploaded all their clips from when they played TV poker and then said, hey, they're bluffing here. And hey, they have it here.
Oh, that's your training data. You go
and that's your training data. And then see, then if you could actually take Jason Kuhn and break down his game in some way, or if he's in fact unreadable, you know, like top elite poker players versus amateurs. It could be really interesting. Figure out what the live reads are. So there are people who think they're good at live reads, right? So this will be
But this is going to totally change the game with those Meta glasses, because those are also, you can buy them in like regular glasses, like not sunglasses mode. So you're going to have to tell people, hey, you can't wear those.
I don't know if you saw my tweet the other day and what you think of this, but my position with Google Glass was, and I told this directly to Larry Page, like you have to, when this thing's recording or turned on, have a light. And it should have a light that if it's turned on, it's green.
Yep.
And if it's recording, it's red, audio or video. Yep. And, you know, I'm not big on regulation. You know, I'd rather the market dynamics, you know, sort of define this. But I don't know. What do you think of that? Like, if the standard was, you know, it had to be green if on, red if.
Yeah. So the Snapchat glasses, they used to have a, like a kind of a circle, right?
Yes.
When they were doing it, right?
And did the circle go on when you're recording?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the humane pin, I was just at a dinner with one of the co-founders, and then she had it, and it has the same thing. When it's recording, it's very clear that it's recording and it's active.
How do you know it's recording? Is it red?
It has like a light on it. Yeah, like a very distinct.
Blinking red light?
It's not a blinking red light, yeah.
See, this is what I think these guys are cowards. I'm not humane. They're probably cowards too, but I think these folks are cowards in the wearable space to put on a red light because they think, oh, it's going to be scary. I think it's the exact opposite. I don't think they're thinking straight. If these things are going to be adopted in society and people are not going to get punched in the face for covertly recording people or kicked out of a bar like the glass holes did back in the day, the Google glass holes.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
The woman got punched or something. I mean, I'm not for physical violence, but I am a realist. Yeah. Like, if you came up to me with, like, I put a recording camera in my face, now everybody's paparazzi. You see what happens when, like, people do that to celebrities over and over again. Yeah. Like, people snap. It's not the society we want to live in.
Yeah.
So everybody should. Yeah, there's a humane fight.
Apparently, so it has a trust light when it's recording. Yeah. Right? Flashes, like,
trust
a light.
I like the name trust light, but I don't know. Yeah. The color of the trust light.
Like on a video camera back in the day. Remember those? Like those
video That's what I'm basing it on. When you had a video camera, they put a flashing, they put the red light on it or a flashing red light. I give this one, I don't know how good it is. You know, on potential, I think it's obviously like, this is incredible. I'm going to just withhold my judgment and just give it a B minus for now. You know, I can't tell right now from the interface. I don't know how it's trained.
Okay.
So that could be, you know, me just not playing with enough. But I'm going to give it like a B minus right now. I think it's got potential. Okay. I want to really understand why. That fact that it said 99.999% confident, that just makes me not believe it. So I would need an explanation of some incredible score like that.
Okay. All right. I give it a B. I think it's like early. You know, I was just pulling it up as we were doing it there. That model was only trained on 80 videos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, which one could argue is like maybe not a big enough training set, but maybe we can hear back from the team and see what they have to say.
Explain to us where you're at.
Yeah.
And then
they could be a lot great of questions team to have on, right? See, right here, it says trained on 80 videos. So it's like, so I pulled that one up. So,
all right. You know what? I'm going to give mine a B because I'm going to go from a B minus to a B because they did explain that. And I was, the reason I was kind of like, a little down on this is because I didn't feel like when I looked at the interface originally that it gave me enough context to give, you know, like the score of the movie.
Yeah, that because I was in the playground. If you go into the, I think it's the same thing. And, you know, there's a lot to learn from there and you should have them on.
I like the idea, though, of also knowing, combining this data with health data and knowing if you have early onset Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or you're slurring your words. Like, I think this technology, if somebody was on a Zoom call and was speaking, or if your phone was listening to you persistently, if you start slurring your words, if it knew, if it just gave you an alert, hey, you're slurring your words. Are you drinking alcohol? Or do you think you might be having a heart attack? Or we noticed you didn't get, you only had 3 hours of sleep last night. You didn't get any REM sleep. Those are the three reasons you could be slurring your words and you just dismiss. Like I get the loud alerts. You ever get the loud alerts when your kids scream or something?
Yeah.
So my girls like to scream when I, you know. Yeah. Play tag with them or whatever. So I'm constantly and getting these like, alerts. That the decibels are going deaf for my girls. I'm playing tag. Awesome. I mean, you could do that, right? You could just be like, hey, you might be having
there's
a heart attack.
Lot of potential there for someone to own this. Yeah, for sure. Mm,
great job. Listen, I know myself as a founder, there are things that I love doing. I love building products. I love hiring people. And there are things I hate, payroll, HR. So I use Gusto. Gusto is the best. Gusto's payroll and HR services make running a small business much easier because it was specifically designed for you, the small business owner. And payroll is something you definitely do not want to mess up. Oh, and I know it. Gusto will automatically calculate your paychecks, do your payroll taxes, set up open enrollment, and that's not all. Gusto also handles onboarding, health insurance, the 401k, time tracking, commuter benefits, hey, people going back to work, offer letters, you want to get those right, and They even give you access to their HR experts. Gusto will let you focus on the most important stuff in your business, like getting product market fit or bear hugging your customers and making sure they're happy. It's super easy to set up and get started. And if you're moving from another provider, Gusto can transfer all your data for you. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy, folks. So here's the best part. Because you're a Twist listener, you get 3 months free. Yes, that's right. Not one, not two. Three free months. All you have to do is go to gusto.com/twist, gusto.com/twist. You must go to Gusto. Again, that's gusto.com/twist.
The next we're going to do, this should be a quick short. This is going to be an update on one of our bets, which are also available at thisweekinstartups.com/bets. And just a quick short one. I want to get your reaction. So this one, this is an analyst I follow, like a chip analyst, Dan Neistat on X. The iPhone 16 with generative AI expected to launch debut in September with the A18 chip with, you know, the latest. And so this is a little tease. And, you know, you know how I know this is real? I'm just going to click this article here and it's like fully in like, you know, it's like some site from Taiwan, which means it's like, you know, this Taiwan, is a real deal. Like someone knows what's going on there. So that's kind of
was a big portion of our leaks at Engadget were either executives who worked at the company or, you know, Shenzhen, Akihabara, Factory Express, where they loved the thing. And they would just send us a picture from the line when they were making a StarTAC or some nonsense.
Yeah.
And we would get it from them.
So this has like the whole, like some, you know, some kind of slide right out of some presentation talking about the different, you know, chips and all
that. So we don't know, but what they're saying is there's going to be the A18 chip, which is the chips that go in phones, as opposed to the M chips, which is a series of chips, the silicon that Apple makes that goes in laptops. And the A18 is going to
launch with the iPhone 16.
With the iPhone 16, which is the next one.
Yeah.
And
September.
Okay. And it will have generative AI is going to debut. And we have a bet for July 1st.
We do.
If these models will be built into the phones.
Correct. And so I'll just pull that up because we have the bet site here.
We now have the bet site, which is
so I'll pull this week in
startups.com/bets that we're making. And I think our bet was that it would be announced or released. That's the question.
We said deployed locally on phone. Models deployed locally on devices.
Okay.
You took I'll win this one.
Yeah. I win this one. No doubt. Because you know what? The phone's not going to be in your hands until the fall. So I think I'll win this one. So if we had made the bet, this is where if you're a gambler, the definition of the bet matters. Because we didn't bet that it's announced. And then if you were going to bet it was announced, we'd say announced, officially announced. So this is announced.
Yes.
Unconfirmed.
Yes.
Announced by Apple. So there's three different bets we could have made. Leaked, announced, officially in your hand. And so, I win this one, I think. Then we just,
I gave a little like concession here, I think is going to be, I said it's going to be close.
It's going to be close
to our bets.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So that was just a quick update on our bets.
Quick update on our bets. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's exciting.
And these are $1,000 bets, by the way, folks. We're making $1,000 bets when we settle up. Somebody could sting.
And I like to hear that history of how you guys were getting the scoops, because that's kind of my scoop angle as well.
Okay, let's keep going.
Okay, so this one is super exciting. It's an area that I'm passionate about personally. So this is a company called Forever AI. That's how you pronounce it, FRVRAI.
And FRVR.AI is the website.
Correct.
It's Forever without the vowels.
Exactly. And there are like a bunch of seasoned game folks that have basically taken AI to create sort of these small casual games. And so we're going to do like sort of a live demo here where, here's a game, that you can play.
It's Galaga, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I say, oh, you know what? That's cool. So let me just die here. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to take this game and we're going to remix it. And so I'm going to click this edit button here. I'm going to click remix. That's going to open it in their editor. Mm. And what I can do is I can say, make the ship shoot dual missiles, right? And what I can do is, and I just hit enter there. And what it's going to do is it's going to go through the code right live. And this is doing it. And it will basically edit the game.
Oh my God.
And basically now you see.
What?
And so, And then the other thing you can do is I can just go in here and I can say, let's just change this enemy and let's create a different enemy. So let's imagine this and give me a description.
Donald Trump's head.
It
won't let you do it. You don't think?
The content filter. Yeah, I think the content filter is
probably stopped. Let's just try. Try doing Darth Vader.
Okay.
Make it look like Darth Vader.
How about this? How about a make.
Try to see if it will do like adjacent Sith, to
Sith Lord head. How about cool. that, right?
Awesome, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Imagine. Now you click imagine and see what happens.
And then you click imagine. And so it's going to do a generation here. Okay. And what's really amazing is, and they've got lots of different game styles here, from side scrollers to, you know, these shooters to Space Invaders to Asteroids. But what this is going to do for game creation, it's like the way I think about it is what we saw happen with YouTube and video. Mm-hmm. I believe video games have surpassed even,
It just made Kylo Ren and some very creative Darth Vader looking.
I can
pick
that and you can see now, so now I can play it again. And now I have the,
oh my God.
Isn't that wild?
It's genius.
And you can do even more sophisticated things than that, but and then you can basically publish this game. So you go back here and you publish it.
So it's democratized a number of things. Yes. Here. You've democratized game publishing and you've democratized writing code.
Yes.
This is, and you're making the analogy to how YouTube democratized owning a TV network, you know, a channel on YouTube. Correct. Is the essentially like having a channel on your cable box. So Mr. Beast is like, he's standing, you know, next to MSNBC and CNN and, you know, TNT, whatever, HBO. Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of getting here faster than I thought, if I'm being honest. We're in year two of large language models. Yeah. The absolute creativity and insanity here is awesome. They did narrow it, right? So because you're editing an existing game, that narrows, I think, what the AI has to do. So we didn't start with a blank piece of paper and say, I want to make a game that is like a Nintendo game that has a Sith Lord, you know, so it's not quite that.
Yeah.
But it obviously is two jumps away from that. So you're editing existing code base. I got to give this an A. I'm sorry for giving high scores of late, but this is literally mind blowing to me. It's
getting so good. Like we're kind of in a world where it's really impressive. Like, and look, you've been you've been in content creation from the beginning.
Yeah.
And you've seen that transform. And, you know, you've definitely seen the video game industry.
Yep.
And this is going to fundamentally change it. So you think about Roblox, Epic Games, and everything that comes in and around it. I think we're going to see a massive explosion. And another prediction I'll make is I think we'll start to see creators now as well, where YouTube was the platform that was needed to highlight creators.
Yep.
And I think we're going to see video game creators, because right now people create these games inside these platforms. We don't know about them.
Yep.
So we're going to see that as well. Someone's going to be known for creating really incredible games in that way. Rather than them being companies, we'll see individuals doing it.
Just like, you know, people have created great podcast news channels, you know, email newsletters, these things, you know, even Drudge Report, you know, as just a solo reporter, think about how he changed history with the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton scandal, and, you know, other ones that he broke. You know, a solo artist, a solo creator, being able to create something just as one individual that generates $1 million, $10 million, $100 million. You know, DJs doing that, right? There are DJs who make tracks, just them on a laptop with a Starlink connection, you know, on a boat, boom, just change the world. Now, that might seem obvious now, but I can tell you, having grown up as the generation, Gen X is the generation that spans these pre-internet, post-internet, pre-online, post-online. Now you got a generation that's going to be pre-AI, post-AI.
Post-AI, you know? Wow, yeah.
So just let's pause there for a second and recognize that our kids are going to remember, they'll be the generation that remembers the time before AI and the time after AI.
After.
They would have submitted a school report, at least my older child would have submitted a report without AI, and now they're going to be doing it in college with AI. They're going to have done, my younger kids who are 7, they're going to probably only remember submitting term papers or doing art with AI. They're only going to remember an AI world. They probably won't remember the time before AI. And this is going to be like a whole different way of looking
like
at the world.
It's like being born in the year 2000. Like, you don't know the world without the internet.
You don't know the world without online. When I explain to people what it was like to get movie tickets.
Yeah.
Just the act of getting movie tickets and going and seeing a movie. So going to, wanting to see a movie required going to a movie theater. And it required going to a movie theater when the movie was playing, because there wasn't a virtual jukebox video player in the sky called Netflix or, you know, Disney Plus, where you could just get Star Wars anytime. If we wanted to see Star Wars, we had to wait for the summer when they re-released it. And it was so popular that every year they would re-release Star Wars before Empire came out.
You had to open up the newspaper, find the time. Then you'd go wait in line. No, you'd wait in line maybe even for that time, right?
Yeah, for that time. And the, and you just got a ticket that was red, green, or blue.
Yeah.
And it had a number on, and they just ripped it in half and handed you your stub back. You need to keep your stub so you get back into the theater if you went to the bathroom or something. And there was no arranged seating. And you couldn't watch it at home. And then VHS came out, and you could watch it at home. And we were like, whoa, we can watch Empire Strikes Back anytime we want. Like, that's all of a sudden happening in this AI generation. It's going to be wild. Their expectation is that everything
travel
they
agents
touch,
are the other one. Travel agents are the other one. Remember? Like,
if you wanted a ticket, explain to people, if you wanted to go somewhere in the world, if you wanted to go to Tokyo, what did you have to do? Or you wanted to go to
like
Paris?
You'd go to like the mall or a strip mall.
Yep.
And there'd be like a business, and you'd walk in and they'd be sitting on a desk, and you'd sit down with them, and then you'd tell them where you'd want to go. And then basically they would be on a screen and they would maybe type something.
Have a terminal.
In.
They had a weird terminal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then they would give you a price, and that would be it.
And like, then they print your tickets.
Yes.
They print your tickets, and you needed to bring a giant envelope with you.
I remember they had that red thing too. Because it'd make multiple carbon copies of it.
And you'd then have you'd to have then these, not lose
and
your tickets.
Those. Yeah. If you lost your ticket,
you lost money, and you could sell the ticket. So I could take my ticket to France and hand it to you and sell it to you. Then you could take that ticket to an airport and say, I have a ticket to go to Paris. And they'd say, okay, when do you want to go? And you'd hand them the ticket that was paid for already, and they would put you on a flight. It was bizarre.
Yeah.
Your name wasn't even in the system as you on the flight necessarily.
There was no system.
There was no system. You bought five tickets. They printed them. They exchanged cash with you. You took these five magical pieces of paper, and they let you on the flight with the paper.
Yeah.
And if they oversold the flight.
If you watch Home Alone. You know, if you watch Home Alone during Christmas.
Yes. They have paper tickets. It's bizarre. It's just absolutely insane.
Awesome.
Sorry for two having their minds blown.
We're kind of like, oh my God, I remember back
But think
in
about
the day.
Everything you experience, Sandeep, for this generation, they're going to say, well, I don't like it that way. Change it. You know, that's a great movie, but I want the protagonist to be a woman, a boy, you know, an alligator, you know, and boop. Okay. I give that an A. I give that an A.
Yes.
What do you give it, Sandeep? Yeah.
I give it. I'm an A plus. Like I'm really. Yeah, I am. I'm a big believer in the video game economy and what's happened with it. And I've been a gamer for a very long time.
Mm.
And so to see the ability for that ecosystem to explode is very exciting.
I love Age of Empires. Even in my older years, I love playing a real time strategy. I started playing the Frost Giant game. Those are the people who made StarCraft, and they're making like a new real time strategy. Is the RTS is my RTS. Category.
Okay.
Command and Conquer, Age of Empires, StarCraft all fall into real-time strategy. It's, you know, like you build a civilization, you collect resources, you then build weapons.
You mine gold.
Or whatever it is. Yeah. Wood, meat, stone, and gold in Age of Empires.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. My daughters are into it now, too. So I'm literally going to buy three PC gaming laptop so we can all play Age of Empires together. And
you have a LAN party again.
We're literally going to have a LAN party. Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you want to build a great company, you need a great team. It's that simple. And if you want to hire great team members, the first step is finding them. But where are they? You know where they are. LinkedIn Jobs. That's the solution you've been looking for. LinkedIn has more than 1 billion users, which is easily the largest professional network in the world. And you can land both active and passive job seekers. LinkedIn also knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats right now, and you might not have the time or resources to devote to hiring. So let LinkedIn make it automatic for you. Go post an open role on LinkedIn, put that purple hiring ring
on your profile. Critically important. Then you start posting some interesting content. Talk about your day, talk about your career, maybe comment on a news story, whatever's trending in your industry. And then you watch the qualified candidates roll in. Sometimes from your network, sometimes friends of a friend, and sometimes it's just those passive LinkedIn users reading their newsfeed, trying to get educated, and they see you're hiring. So guess what? The first job listing is on us, and you can get that first free job listing at linkedin.com/twist, linkedin.com/TWIST to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions do apply.
We're going to go back to the folks that kind of kicked it all off. They've launched some new features recently, back to ChatGPT.
Okay, this is OpenAI's ChatGPT. So here we are in the well-known interface.
So what you can do now is you can say, I'm thinking of flying to New York tomorrow.
Thinking of flying to New York tomorrow.
And you can just say at Kayak.
Oh! Right?
And see, now it's that, right?
Yeah.
What are my options?
So you don't have to go hunt and peck to go find.
Well, that's exactly it. So within your command line. Yeah. And so, just give it allow here. And so within that, you can basically at mention.
Sweet.
The different GPTs that are in there.
Yep.
And so, and you
don't even have to know if a GPT exists. You just be like at OpenTable, at Redfin, at
exactly
Amazon, and just see what happens.
Yes. Yeah. And I think this is really smart by them because you don't, when this all started, so we're just seeing evolution by them. Remember, they kind of had these kind of apps.
You had to plug them in yourself. Yeah. They were just not in line.
Plugins initially. Exactly. Yeah. Then they became sort of GPTs. Now they're just within your command line. So as long as you've recently used it or seen it, and you can see it here and you can see the flights that are coming up.
Now it doesn't book it for you, but you can click
it'll
book
send
now.
You off to Kayak to book it.
Well, hopefully that would launch the app if you had the Kayak app on your phone it should. Well, because this was Kayak. See, I want to have it have at United.
Yes.
I want to just do at United, at JetBlue, because those are the two I like most. I like JetBlue Mint.
Well, they need to make a GPT if they want
to
be.
They need to make a GPT. Why don't you try that? Do a new one and see if there's an at United.
You have to kind of discover the GPTs first. So the way they did it is you have to have been through them. So I don't think there's a United Airlines. I don't see one in here. Yeah. So you just kind of just get this.
Not yet. So if somebody works at United Airlines, get on this. You got to, this is like that whole race where people didn't have websites, then they didn't have apps, now they don't have GPTs, now we got to drag everybody kicking and screaming to add a GPT. But this is going to be incredible. This is the beginning of the super app, Uber, where you just, keep adding features to it, and God bless, it's going to be awesome. So I give them, what do I get for that? I think it's a B. It's a B. It could be better.
It's a good new feature, but it's going to make it exactly what you said. It's making it such that you can do more within your ChatGPT interface, which is smart by them, and going to continue to put them in front of a lot of folks in the race to be the internet's apex aggregator.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're the platform, you're the aggregator, and then you have a certain number of users, everybody has to build it. Like I just said, there's no JetBlue. In the early days, JetBlue was like, we have a web responsive website. Just use that. And I was like, but I want an app. Everybody's like, I like an app. I like to have a pretty little button. Everybody's like, okay, I'll make an app and wrap our website in it. And then they're like, but your website doesn't work well in the app. It's like, okay, I'll make a responsive app.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'll make an actual app. Yeah. Anyway, I give this a B. Could be better, but it's a great start.
I'm kind of the same. It's like, it's just a feature and it puts it in there. I think it's worth thinking about. Okay,
what would you add to it? If you were sitting there brainstorming, I had one thing, which is I want to be able to do it without having to add them first, right? And I want to be able to do multiple, right?
Those are the two things that I really found. You have to kind of have discovered them first, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
And I want to use multiple. I want to say, the ticket, then open table.
Sushi,
and
a few open of them table, together. Exactly. Hotel. Yeah. So we're both B's, solid B's. B for Sandeep, B for Jacob. Let's keep going.
That's it. Okay. So just on this same track, what we're going to share is last Friday, I believe, or Thursday. Last Friday.
Okay.
So, maybe we're like 4 or 5 days ago. Hugging Face launched something called their assistants. Mm. And so what they've done is they've kind of created an open community to create their own GPT. So GPTs So let's bring everyone up to speed. 3 million were available at launch. And so this was launched 4 or 5 days ago. They already have 3,000.
Whoa, Hugging Face has their own GPTs now.
Correct.
Okay. And the idea are they written in? Like how, you know, what's the standard here? I'm assuming it's some sort of open face, some sort of open source approach here, or you can write any code base you want.
Exactly. And you can kind of plug it into, you know, they kind of follow the same template and framework as OpenAI, but instead of having to build it using OpenAI, you can kind of build it with whatever backend you want, and it becomes available in their ecosystem here. So
is it portable? So, which is to say, can I take this one and use it at ChatGPT?
I don't think so. I don't think they're portable right now. Yeah.
So this is going to be, this is where somebody could, this is where Hugging Face could do a lot of damage. They could just say, we're going to make an open source standard. These apps are portable. So the what does ChatGPT call them now? GPTs.
Yeah.
Do they own the IP around GPTs? GPT is a common word, or do they own that?
GPT is a technology, right? It's kind of like saying
so Ethernet, they can't own that. Yeah. So portable GPTs or making a GPT standard would be a great thing for Hugging Face to do.
Yeah.
Okay, and good. So I got that off my chest.
When you create one, you'd go through a similar process. And, you know, we did one of these when GPTs first came out. Right. And then you can pick a few different models here that you want to have behind
it. So disruptive.
Yes. But what I would say here is, look, now you're just starting to see the ecosystem go in two different directions. With GPTs, you're limited to using their models. Here, you can kind of pick between Mixtral, Llama.
Pick the meta one. I want to pick the meta one. Let's pick meta. Yeah,
sure.
Llama. Okay, this is Zuckerberg's open source. And you saw his announcement with his stock ripping. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's name ours Healthy Recipes.
Okay.
Okay, and the description is make healthy recipes.
Well, this is the description. Okay. Make healthy recipes.
Whatever. Yeah. Like, this is not the instructions, right?
Instructions go here, right? You'll act as a world-class chef.
You're giving the prompt. You'll act as a world-class chef that provides healthy recipes.
Healthy recipes. To your users. Oh, I got to log in here.
Okay, but I get it. You could put all the instructions and you could say, listen, we don't want to use those oils. Now people tell you don't use all these oils, right? And then you could say, hey, we're not going to use these vegetables that have inflammation. You're not going to include these. You're not going to include that. You're going to, you know, keep sugars to natural sugars. And then boom, it just starts making your recipes. I love it.
Exactly.
Fantastic. This is great. Yeah. So like, this is where like, if you're going to build a startup in AI, you're going to need to have training data as a differentiator, brand, or the accoutrement, the tools, the features around the AI, right? And so,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm working on like 2.0 of my vision for the inside stuff I showed you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to show it to you because I got a new team working on it. I switched teams. Okay. Sometimes you got to switch teams, you know? So yeah, I switched teams. The team did a great job on the first part, but I wanted to go with a different type of team to build it. And I realized, well, everybody's going to be able to summarize the news. That's like table stakes. Like, it's not going to be a big deal. So I came up with two ideas on top of that you can't replicate that have network effects. So anyway, I've been thinking through like, okay, all the cool little things you can do, summarizing, finding, whatever, that's all good. But there's another layer that you can't, which is the network, the brand, et cetera. So look for an inside app coming soon. For this is another one where I'm going to give it a B+ to give it room to grow. But it's totally fantastic. Well, what do you give it?
I'm going to be a little bit higher there because I what I like about this is embracing the open source ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to put them at an A because what they're really doing is embracing all the different models, all the different companies that are putting models out there. And so that's going to lead to a much better ecosystem for us. And I think
you can see
the open approach, it's much better for everyone.
Could you say, I want to build like a two-layer, you know, app? I think they call these assistants. Is there a parlance? So they call it
assistants
instead of GPTs. Could you build one that says, hey, step one, we're going to help you write a script using Llama. You know, you're a director, you're a screenplay writer. Step two is we're going to take that and we're going to make a movie out of it using you know, instead of using the Llama model, what's the visual one you use? Stable Diffusion, maybe. What's the video one?
Runway.ml. I think that was
Runway.ml. Right. So like you can kind of build it in two steps kind of situation. Yeah, really interesting. I'm going to give this a B+. I think it's great. Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. All Let's do one more and then we'll wrap the show. Another great one.
Okay.
Another great show. You can see all of our AI demos at thisweekinstartups.com/AI.
Okay. I'm going to go back to ChatGPT for this one as well, because I thought this was pretty cool. And, you know, it's a use case which is really, I think, is going to take off. It's using the 11 Labs. You know, we've had them on before. I think you guys even do a bunch of work with them. And so what I did here was I said, generate a short story for me, then convert it into an audiobook, two paragraphs. Mm. And I did it using the 11 Labs text-to-speech GPT.
11 Labs text-to-speech GPT.
Correct.
You said, generate a story for me, then convert it to an audiobook, two paragraphs.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And then see, the first thing it did was it came back to me and said, well, what's the voice that you want to do it in? And I picked Jarvis. Mm. And so then it did the story for me, and then it generated the audio. And if I go over here now, the story that was generated, I can play it. And let's listen.
Metropolis, beneath the shadow of towering skyscrapers, lay a quaint little bookstore that seemed almost forgotten by time.
So that's Jarvis from Iron Man.
Avengers, right? Iron Man. Yeah, I'm not sure where he made his debut.
Yeah.
Wow, and so, that's wild.
Right? And so look at the number of things that have come together there. The story generation is coming from, you know, the model, right? GPT-4. Then you have 11 Labs doing their text-to-speech as well. And then think about what we're going to be able to do very, very quickly here. And
yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And then the question becomes, like, if I'm writing a novel,
yep.
am I not going to use this? And then I'm going to start, I wonder if people are going to start saying this is organic, 100% human, like literally the label, 100% human, no AI inside. Like, I know this sounds crazy and dystopian.
Yeah.
But I think people are going to start
your next book would say there's no AI.
No AI, AI free. Like, you know how some people are into organic, non-GMO, they put labels on food. I wonder if we're going to start labeling content like this is organic, right?
Oh, so I made impossible. This. That's impossible.
Well, I mean, no, it's not. I mean, people make acoustic music and they just say, like, imagine I said, this is one take acoustic music. I take out my guitar, I play the song, and you get to experience Tracy Chapman. I don't know if you saw that at the Grammys.
The Grammys, yeah.
That was great, huh? Yeah. I mean, I got a lot of feels from that.
Yeah.
But, whatever, 30 years later.
Walkman. I saw your tweet, right?
Yeah, I used to listen to that. That Tracy Chapman album meant a lot to me because I was 17, 18 years old when it came out. I was 17 years old, 1988, and I was going to Fordham, and I had a CD Walkman, you know, and I would... you know, get a bunch of AA batteries. I pop that in there. And that was like my guilty pleasure was listening to that album on the way to school, you know, Fordham. I went at night and I would commute. And then to see her, you know, cause she's kind of, doesn't perform, I guess, publicly or whatever. No, all that
out of
much.
The spotlight completely.
Yeah,
it was the first time in a long time that she's performed.
And she was just so powerful. And then you see the guy singing with her who had done the cover of it. And he's just in awe of her.
Yeah,
it's just like a great, like, multi-generational and awesome
people
moment.
People were noticing a lot of things, like she had no monitor, like just old school,
right?
Yeah,
that's what I was noticing when she was playing. There's some very intricate finger picking in that song. And I was watching for the finger picking and stuff like that. And I was just like, you know, I think with this AI stuff, just like we're going to be like free range chicken as opposed to factory raised or no hormones, no GMO, whatever, you know, organic food, whatever. I think that's going to start happening where so much of what we consume is so processed content-wise, the words, the music, et cetera, that people might say, you know what? I just want to see a human do this without the computer. Just like you might want, you know, some people might like to go to an electronic music festival and watch somebody press the play button. And then, you know, the DJ is like moving a bunch of knobs. I don't think they're actually changing anything.
No.
I think they hit the play button and
their set list, everything is already done, right?
Like, I think it's kind of already programmed. They're just jumping around and, you know, getting you're kind of getting everybody hyped. But it's kind of fun to see somebody actually do it as a human and say, whoa, the human can do it too.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it reminds me of like classic cars. Like there's a Tesla, which is incredible and super safe.
Drives
but then
you somewhere.
There's like, you know, but then there's like an old Corvette.
Mustang. Right? And, yeah, old yeah, Corvette.
Mustang. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then you think about those cars. So I think that you can get in there and change the carburetor. You can change the spark plugs. You could, you know,
get adjust it changed. The timing a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, everything. You can tweak it. And then think of this. All these cars now can drive themselves, can be remotely controlled. I don't know if you've turned this on your Tesla, but you can turn the cameras on and it's like a remote camera system. Did you turn that on yet in the app?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, where you can turn it on and kind of look around the car. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, so like when your car is in your driveway, you can be in bed and you hear something outside, you turn it on, you can see all around your car. So your car is like eight security cameras. It's pretty crazy. Yeah, and you can see, you can turn the inside camera on, except if the car is moving, then you can't turn it on. Yeah. So because some safety there. But I was just thinking, if you don't want to be tracked, you could get in a Mustang, leave your phone at home,
drive to Mexico,
and have a wad of cash and drive to Mexico and just disappear. Or you could have your phone and your car and, you know, live stream it for the entire world in HD. It's like the world has changed that much. And this past year, it's changed incredibly. All right. So what do we give that? You basically created an audiobook soup to nuts. I mean, it's
in a prompt.
I mean, I'm gonna give it to Jarvis,
who's like one of my favorite characters, right?
You know, so, well, it's also an actor who probably should be getting paid.
Well, I'm sure Eleven is like, they, you know, they're
Eleven probably licensed it from him. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. On a flat rate, I bet he should be getting paid per minute to publish. Yeah. When you hit, you should be able to listen to it, but when you publish it, you should have to pay. Like a dollar per minute or a dollar per hour or something. You should be getting some residual. I give that a B.
Okay.
Right now, I would give it an A if it actually uploaded it to a store and let people buy it. Not necessarily Audible, because they're going to not let you publish this stuff to Audible.
Yeah.
But if you could publish it to DistroKid or whatever those third party tools are, like my friend Filmid, where then there was a store where you could buy the audiobook, that would be kind of cool. So I give it a B. It's incredible. It's extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of there, like B plus. Like it's all stitched together a bit, and so the only thing it needs to go to like the next level, it needs to be totally seamless. Publish, get on. You know, the thing is, it's all inside the ChatGPT ecosystem. Right. I want that on my phone, and I want it in my
Oh, here's the chapter headings. Let's do the cover. So it's like it's getting there, but I give it a B. All right, listen, been incredible. It's been incredible. Great episode. If you would like to be featured on This Week in Startups AI edition, it's typically every Monday, thisweekinstartups.com/AI to see all of the, get the playlist and everything, see all these bets and everything we're doing. It's incredible. At mention us on the Twitter or the X, formerly known as Twitter, at Sundeep, at Jason. Yeah, I'm still at Jason. Unless my account's been banned for asking somebody who they are.
You got pretty close there.
Pretty close to my first Twitter ban in 15 years.
Your bestie jumped in for a second.
Elon jumped in. Yeah. For people who don't know what we're talking about, we can talk about it here at the end of the show.
Yeah, of course, sure.
I'm not going to say the name of the account because I don't want there to be like pile on, or I'm just trying to let this thing settle. There are anonymous accounts on Twitter that have gotten very large. Some of them have been funny, like Goldman Sachs Elevator, right? And then some of them have been particularly hurtful to some people feel they've been hurtful. I'm not making any political judgments here, but like Libs of TikTok is an account. And the Libs of TikTok account I will talk about because that's been a very public one. There is a term called doxing. Now, what do you consider doxing? I'm curious, before today and this whole brouhaha that I got into on X, what did you consider doxing?
Well, you know, I'm kind of polluted now because I've read the thread, but I'm going to try to go back. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I would have considered is basically highlighting someone's true identity and public information, like where they live. The whole doxing would be the whole, like everything. That's what I would have put it.
Got it. Okay.
The package. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's where you live. Here's where you work. Here's your name.
Yeah.
Got it.
Exactly.
So just public number, information. Okay.
Yeah. Great. Public information. Yeah.
I've always considered doxing, like here's somebody's location. Yeah. And I understand that people feel differently about this. We're going to need a new term, doxing location, doxing identity. So I'm going to, for the purpose of this conversation we're going to have, I'm going to say doxing location, doxing identity. Doxing location, we can all agree, no bueno, dangerous, Don't do it. Now, doxing somebody's identity means if they use a pseudonym, they call themselves, you know, Libs of TikTok, or whatever that account's called. Does that person have the right to be anonymous is the question. What do you think on social media?
Well, I don't know if they have the right to be anonymous.
Yeah.
But I think they're trying to be anonymous.
Right.
And, you know, it's on them to protect themselves, right? It's like most of these accounts, you know, even we've had some in our own circles, right? That were close to us and then you realize this is one of our friends or something like that as well. So
Fake Chamath is coming to mind.
Exactly. Right.
A parody one account. Right. So there's parody accounts.
Yeah. And so I think the real challenge is once you're doing that, like, do you have the right to remain that way? No. But it's sort of, I guess, a double-edged sword that you get with,
And so with great power comes, my position is, hey, I simply asked, and I did it multiple times because people kept asking me to cover on the podcasts, this one particular account.
And I don't think your intent was like, your intent wasn't like, who is this person? Where's his address? It was like, sort of like, hey, who is this person? Like,
who is this person? I just asked the same question, who is this person?
It was with Fake Chamath, right? Like, who is this? Like,
who is this person? Right. Yeah. And then I asked the person himself, like, who are you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm curious because you're breaking, and this to the person's credit, they seem to be breaking news or somebody's using them as a vehicle to break news. So to peek behind the curtain, when you have these large accounts, there can be, it could be anything. It could be an individual who is just a random person commenting. Yeah. Great. That's like one thing. It could be
a team.
A team of people. It could be a political organization.
Yeah.
It could be a foreign actor who wants to spread misinformation. It could be a useful idiot who is being given information by a foreign entity to spread it or by clever people who are using it to spread it. And so the question is, you know, these things can get very big. Hundreds of thousands of followers, perhaps millions. I don't know if any of them have millions yet. And so I believe people should own their words. I believe it's fine for them to try to be anonymous. I believe it's fine for people to try to figure out who they are in that game of cat and mouse. You don't have the right to be anonymous and have a huge following. And then it's okay for platforms too to have different rules. It turns out the rule on X now, for those formerly known as Twitter, is the rule is you can't reveal somebody's identity.
Identity, that's what was made clear by Elon, right? He said you cannot.
Elon
do that
said you can't reveal people's identity, and he wants to protect people because they don't want to lose their job. I disagree. I know this is incredible for people to think that, you know, two friends might disagree about something, but there's different platforms. Reddit has got pseudonyms too. Twitter is going to be pseudonyms. I like people to own their words, and that doesn't mean I want to actively, you know, have people get outed or whatever. But I do think if you want to have a huge platform and you want to have impact in the world and cover things like politics or, you know, whatever, or do something full contact, like the Libs of TikTok account is very controversial because it's amplifying to a very large level things that are public already, but that people maybe didn't expect that they would get brigaded when Libs of TikTok highlights, you know, some lib person saying something really stupid and then, you know, 1,000 MAGA people attack the person or whatever. So anyway, I think whistleblowers, pseudonym accounts, and anonymous sources, they can all exist in the world. I don't have a problem with them existing. I also don't have a problem with whistleblowers being revealed. It's dangerous, but that's part of the you know, the choice you make as a whistleblower is that eventually you will be revealed. You know that. Like, it's almost a certainty. Pseudonyms, you're going to be revealed eventually if you get any kind of credibility or growth. And I actually think that publications like journalists rely on anonymous sources too much. And I think that's where I think you can get people to understand the point. We've all now seen anonymous sources are like a driving force of journalism now. And it's way too much. I mean, you just go to somebody and you're like, I'll give you anonymity if you say something crazy about this person. And then you don't know if it's a lie or not. And they gave the person anonymity. It feels profoundly unfair to a lot of people. And I think it's overused.
Anyway, that's my position.
I don't know what you think.
What I like
position.
About what Elon said is he at least put the stake in the ground and said, look, this is what we're going to do here. And so now we know.
He's clear.
And and he's made it clear. And if you don't like that, I guess you don't have to use Twitter or X, right? And and look, I sort of expect in other places that, you know, if I'm reading maybe traditional media, that they're not doing what you're saying, which it does happen, where if they have a source, they'll verify who it is and they don't allow the source. They may keep the source anonymous for the sake of the article, but they may go verify who the person is.
Yeah, they will verify who it is, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's going to be the difference between X and not traditional.
And if you want to know how they do that.
Other platforms, yeah.
You know, let's say somebody was an employee of yours and they wanted to leak a piece of information about a project you're working on.
Yeah.
The way they could prove that to a journalist is the journalist lets them contact them from their private email address. And they say, okay, what's your LinkedIn page? And you say, oh, this is my LinkedIn page. So great. Put the word in your bio. Put a comma after that word, a typo.
Yeah.
You know, put a typo there. Put two O's instead of one O. And then tell me to refresh the page. I'll refresh. Okay, now take it out. Refresh. Okay. Now they've confirmed it's you.
Yeah.
Nobody else knows how they confirmed. And, you know, now you're off to the races. So hopefully journalists are doing that kind of thing where they try to, and then making sure that LinkedIn page has existed for a long time and it is followed by other people in the company, whatever. But, you know, then the question, then there's like all these edge cases that came up. What if a journalist outs the libs of TikTok account, which I think Taylor Lorenz did. Taylor Lorenz found out who the person was and then wrote a story about it.
Recently,
If she did that in the New York Times or Washington Post, but didn't do it on TikTok, did she get her X account banned? No, she didn't do it on X.
She didn't do it on X, yeah.
She didn't do it on X. Okay, now if she links to her story where she did it, does she get banned?
Slippery slope, man. I don't know.
I would say yes. In that case, I would say yes, because you link to it, and so it's the same thing. Now, if you link to it after the story comes out and say, I disagree with this, they shouldn't have outed this person, and you link to the story, did you dox them?
Yeah, I think...
if you link to a story where somebody got doxed, are you doxing them?
I don't think so. I don't think I'm responsible at that point. Yeah,
no, because the story's already out.
I think you're going to go the original doxing, right?
Yes, like, the original doxing. By the way, just a piece of advice, somebody who's had security concerns, don't run an anonymous account at scale if you have security concerns. Or turn this account off to start a new one with a different persona and then roll your account so that, because you, the longer the footprint's out there, the greater the chance they're going to get you, you know, and figure it out. And these people do have ways of figuring it out. They figured out who Startup Jackson was. Remember that? Startup Jackson.
That was Parker. It was Parker.
That was Parker. They figured that out.
Worked very closely with you. Yeah.
They figured it out, I think, because they took his tone of voice and then they used AI to check another thread, I think.
No.
I think so. I think or they used some sort of software to say, like, what words did this person use in common? And it was, So anyway, I'm for people owning their words. That's a good little short discussion we had here about it. Okay.
All right.
Yes. So don't dox anybody. Don't obviously location dox anybody.
AI will figure it out, though. That's where we
gonna end. AI is going to figure out who one. They are.
Yeah. If you keep
not somebody's
going
to say, I just did this to use AI to figure out who they are.
No,
AI could also protect you. You could say,
yes.
Hey, I want to say this.
Yeah, but
say it for me in a way that's not traceable and not in my voice. So there's a tip for people who want to stay anonymous is use AI to rewrite what you're writing.
Yeah, that's
smart. Don't even know your own ticks. Okay, we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye. Hey, everybody. I talk to a lot of founders here on This Week in Startups and as an investor, and they tell me the same thing over and over again. They want two things from me, more FaceTime and money. They want me to invest in their companies and they want to spend time together. So we've been working here on a new meetup program. We call it Founder Fridays. And Founder Fridays are an event by founders for founders. This is an event that is hosted in cities by people like you. If you're listening to This Week in Startups, you're a founder. So what are you going to do at Founder Fridays? You're going to get together with other founders in your community. It could be four or five of you. It could be maybe up to 30 of you in a location. Pick a cafe, pick a co-working space. I like to go to a great Mexican joint or maybe a dim sum restaurant. You know, you can do shared food, have a couple of cocktails maybe. You do it on a Friday, you get together and you host it. Now, why is it important for founders to get together? Shouldn't you be at home just focusing? Shouldn't you be in the office just focusing on your startup? Well, if you get together with other founders, true founders who are in the arena building like you are, you're going to get a lot of value from that because you can trade notes with that other founder about what's working at your startup and what's not working. The truth is, if you're facing a problem, there are hundreds of founders out there who have probably solved it already. And instead of you banging your head against the wall, when you sit there and you talk to three or four founders, you're having some dim sum, you're splitting a quesadilla, some fajitas. Somebody say, oh, you know what? I had that same human resources problem. Oh, I had that same technical problem. Oh, I had that same marketing problem. And they might tell you about a tool or a service that'll solve that problem for you. This happens over and over and over again when I do Founder Fridays with our portfolio companies. Now we're going to give you that same experience, but here's what I need you to do. I need you to host this in your city. So you're going to go to thisweekinstartups.com/meetups. That's it. And you'll see a landing page where you can sign up and you can say, I want to host in my city. Now, your city may already be hosting, so you can just join that person. And what if you go to this event and you learn some go-to-market strategy that 10Xs your growth? That might unlock funding. Or you might be talking to somebody and they say, hey, I'm a marketplace too. I'm not a competitive marketplace. Your marketplace is for used cars. My marketplace is for hairstylists, whatever your jam is, whatever you're working on. But they give you some technique that you didn't know about to increase your supply side or get more demand in your marketplace, and you 10X your business. I see this happen all the time. And founders are like mutants, right? And I'm like Professor X here. I'm trying to put on Cerebro and find all the founder mutants in the world and then have you get together and do your own little meetup. And here's what you're not going to have to deal with. You're not going to have to deal with a bunch of service providers trying to sell you software or services. And you're not going to have to sit through a bunch of passive speakers. You can listen to This Week in Startups and get the greatest speakers in the world on your own time. And you're not going to have to pay for a ticket to a conference or get on a plane or fly somewhere. No, this is about having an intimate experience with 5, 10, maybe 24 other founders in your city. Please go to thisweekinstartups.com/meetups if you are a founder. This is for founders by founders only. If you are not a founder, this event is not for you. You can start your own meetup for lawyers, accountants, recruiters. This is for founders by founders. We vet everybody to make sure you're a founder. And if you host it, it's a non-commercial event. Our first Founder Friday will start on February 2nd. So please mark your calendars, and we're going to do these on a rolling basis. You can join an existing meetup if it's already occurring in your city, or you and one or two other founders can start your own. We're using a wonderful piece of software that we've invested in called River. You can sign up for a River account just by going to thisweekinstartups.com/meetups. We've already got hosts and attendees lined up in San Francisco, New York City, Toronto, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, London, and even in India. So this is your chance to connect. And if you didn't hear your city named, you can start your city. Go to thisweekinstartups.com/meetups.